Okay, generally speaking, we're going to be going more or less sequentially through the text. I'd like to actually, when we finish the Svarim, I'd like to actually be able to say, hello, I'd like to actually be able to say that we're actually finished with the Svarim. And Mirtz Hashem, I don't know how far down the road we can make a Siyum on Tanakh, which would certainly be a nice thing to do. set high goals, I think, is the way to go. So I will do a certain amount of reading just to get through, but then I'll stop. But most of the classes will be topic-based. It'll be a combination of reading plus topics. And we gave an introduction to Sefer Shoftim last time. And by the way, if anybody... if you miss a shiur, first of all, I try to go topically. So if you miss a shiur, you miss a shiur. It's not such a bad thing. And only if I miss a shiur, I think then we have problems. Also, the shiurim are all online. They're all on the internet. They're at ericlevy.com. And if you click on the little headphones, you could just click on the shiurim and you'll hear them. You could just click and download them, along with a lot of other shiurim as well. So if you miss something, you really want to hear it, you hear it was a goodie, so feel free to download it from the internet. It's audio. Yeah, so you need a sound card, and cable modem is best, although you can manage with a dial-up, but it'll take a while to download the class. Probably take about 15 minutes to download the class. a cable modem is definitely the way to go. Vayhi Acharei Mot Meshes, we essentially introduced the idea of the attempt to establish Malchut and an unsuccessful attempt to establish Malchut, and that's really the theme of Sefer Shoftim. But now let's analyze piece by piece how Shmuel, or the author, develops these ideas. There are a number of things in Sefer Shoftim we're going to get to, textual difficulties, that I simply don't know the answers to. I have theories, but nothing that I could say is hard proof, so I'd be happy to hear, feel free to pop in with ideas at any time, of course. But we'll go pasuk by pasuk and talk about what we see. So to start with the beginning, I'll read and translate. Vayhi acharei mot Moshe vayishalu bnei Yisrael b'Adonai le'emor. So it was after Yoshua died. And they asked the Jews, here's some sheets here and there. And they asked, the Jews asked Hashem, the bnei Yisrael asked Hashem, who will fight first against the Canaanites in Eretz Yisrael? Vayomer Adonai Yehuda yaleh. So Yehuda goes first because I've given him the land. Yeah. At the very beginning. I have some extra texts here. I have a Hebrew English as well. I could live with the Hebrew, so I'll just do a loose translation. Yeah, but I've got two others here. I have a Yeshua Shoftim, and I've got this dot mikro, which is kind of easy to read. Yeah, I'm just thinking if they have one here. No, they don't have a... They don't. Oh, yeah, very nice. And another one. And there are a few more over there also. Okay, let's continue on with the story. Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon achiv. So Yehuda is told to go up first and fight. Yehuda then turns to his brother Shimon and says, Aleiti b'gorli, go in my lottery, which means my land. Let's fight together. And I'll fight for you. You fight for me. You scratch my back. I'll scratch your back. And Shimon goes with Yehuda. And I'll explain, after we read through the first part, I'll explain what I think is going on here. So Yehuda goes up, and God gives them in the hands. And in the city of Bezek, they conquered, they killed 10,000 people. It was a big victory. Vayimtzu et Adoni Bezek beVezek. They find the king of Bezek in Bezek. Vayilachamu bo, and they fight against him. Vayaku et Haknani v'et Haprizi, and they also fight against the Knani and the Prizi. Are we running out of chairs? I think we have a few more. We've got two here. Yeah. Okay. The Vayana Sadoni Bezek, so Adoni Bezek tries to run away. Vayidufu acharav, they catch him. Vayochazu oto, they run after him, they catch him. Vayikatatu et bahonot yadav raglav, they cut off his big thumb, big toe, both hands. Vayomar Adoni Bezek, shivim malachim, and what does Adoni Bezek say? I did the same thing to 70 kings. Shivim malachim bahonot yidehem raglehem, mekutzatzim, I cut them off. Hayu malachatim tachat shulchani, they were all gathered together under my table. It's a little unclear what that means. Either under his table he actually had like a big pot with 70 thumbs, toes, or what it may What it may be referring to is, there may be a little break. What it may mean is, Hayu Malakatim, these kings were gathered under my Shulchan, which would indicate that he has control over these kings. The truth is, it was probably both, honestly. It was probably a little bit of both. I wouldn't put it past Adoni Bezek. Not that I know him personally, but I wouldn't put it past Adoni Bezek. Kasher Asiti, well, they were close enough to Egypt. They probably had some storage. Hi, we've got one more seat. What? Kasher Asiti Ken Shilim Li, exactly as I did, that's how they pay me back. Now, if you notice in most texts, there's a pay. There's the letter pay after that sentence. What that means is that there's a petucha, which means that there's a break. And what that, the reason why there are breaks in Torah and Navi is to give you time to think about what you've just read, which really means that everything came that came before that is really a story in and of itself and should be analyzed in and of itself. So what we'll do essentially is skip from pay to pay, from Parsha to Parsha, although Parsha is a bad word because when we say Parsha, we think of Lech Lecha Noach. The better word really that's used now to distinguish it from Parsha is a Parshia, or a subsection, a section, and we'll analyze each section in and of itself. So when I'm reading this, a few things are striking me right away. First of all, it's not clear to me the Yehuda-Shimon combination. Now, I can't go fully into why Shimon doesn't get his own property, but if you go through Sefer Yehoshua, you'll see that Shimon's property was absorbed into Yehuda's property. And I've spoken before, I don't want to go into it in detail now, but just to give you an axiom which really needs proving, essentially, the bracha, if you go back to the bracha that Yaakov gave to Shimon and Levi, he was quite angry at them for what they did to Shechem, because what they did to Shechem was just insane from a geopolitical purpose. They had made peace, things were going great, and all of a sudden, just to destroy a peace like that was a terrible thing. Again, we could talk about the whole Din Shechem incident, which would take us weeks, or certainly one shiur. I just want to make this statement. It was a terrible geopolitical thing they did, and I agree that you have room to disagree with me, but for now, bear with me. Yaakov is upset, and he says the following bracha. He says, "Oh, I really need. I should have kept one for myself." Is that a bereshit?
Yeah.
Very nice. So he says in the bracha something very interesting. He says, "You can find it at the very end of bereshit." Here it is. Shimon v'Levi, Achim, their brothers, Klei Chamas Mecherotehem, they sell the tools of anger, hatred, war. So Chamas is a very bad word. The place where we saw that before was in Noach, you know, Dora Mabel. It's a very rough word to use. It's not a, what's that?
No.
Yeah, yes. That's right, an old joke. It's kind of, maybe it's a sort of a destiny that they happened to pick that word. Bisodam, among their secrets, al tavo nafshi, let not my soul come. Bikahalam al techad kvodi, and let not my honor be gathered together with them. Ki v'apam hargu ish, because in their anger they killed a man. Urbir tzonam ikrushor, and with their desire they uprooted a shore. He's probably referring to Yosef, because the Medrash has it, and it's probably right, that Shimon and Levi were the ones who wanted to kill, one of them wanted to kill Yosef. They were the ones who said, let's do the deed. I suspect that Yaakov knows this, and that's why he says ikrushor. Shor is a very strange lashon. If it wasn't for the fact that Yaakov will use it later to describe Yosef, I would have said it's hard to say what he's talking about, but it certainly seems like he's talking about Yosef, and if we translate those words directly, it seems that he knew very well that Shimon and Levi were behind the whole Yosef plot. Arur apam kiaz, cursed is their anger because it is too strong. Ve'evratam ki kashata, and their anger is too stiff, maybe. Achal kem biyakov, I will divide them among Jacob. Va'afitzem biyisrael, and I will scatter them among Israel. We could spend a shiur on this, and some of you have been, I've had mentioned this some years ago when I taught here. Afitzem biYisrael, the curse that Yaakov gave them is in fact what happened to them, because the only two tribes that did not get any land in Israel were Shimon, that was absorbed by Yehuda, and Levi, who also had no tribal land, had merely cities. They would go north later during the time of Melachim, but they weren't given that land. The confusion is that it says that they fought against a city called Tzfat in Yoshua. So the impression is that Tzfat is the Tzfat up north. It's not Tzfat. There was another Tzfat down in Yehuda. It's identified where it is. So they did not have land up to the north, although they would take it at a later time. Later they would run away from Yehuda to go with the northern tribes. But that's when we get to Malachim, we'll discuss that. So essentially Shimon is absorbed by Yehuda, just like Levi is absorbed by everybody else. It was a curse that was correct, and it actually came to fruition, that they were divided among the people. But what's confusing to me here is the language that straddles back and forth. In Pasuk Bet it says, Hashem says Yehuda should go up because I'm giving him, he's going to make all the victories. Yehuda then, you would figure, should go up and fight, but he doesn't. He turns to Shimon and says, let's fight together. But what's interesting is in Pasuk Dalet it goes back to just Yehuda. Val yal Yehuda v'yitin Hashem et ha'kanani ha'prasim b'yadam. Which seems to, right after we included, Yehuda concludes Shimon and Perek in Pasuk Gimel, they're discluded, unincluded, they're excluded in Pasuk, thank you, they're excluded in Pasuk Dalet. I don't know, I sense a meaning to this. I don't know exactly what it is. I read an article that said that it was a negative statement against Yehuda. Yehuda should never have turned to Shimon. Hashem said they were supposed to be the leaders. They were supposed to lead not only a local war in their own tribal lands, but a war that would eventually wind up being victorious all over Israel. And by the fact they turned to Shimon, that was sort of a watering it out of Hashem's command. Okay. I'm not convinced. I mean, okay, it's a theory. It's certainly a theory which satisfies these psukim. Or we could just say that Shimon was cut out because they weren't so big. But I sense that there's something going on here. But honestly, I do not know exactly what it is. So whatever we can make out of it, we can make out of it. And honestly, we don't have to make anything out of it if we don't want to. Yehuda, whenever it says Yehuda and Pasuk Dalet, it meant Yehuda v' Shimon. It's not a big deal that it discusses Yehuda and Shimon. And we can move on. I believe so. In Mizot HaBracha. Seems to be sort of, well,
I mean, it just seems if he became irrelevant, then he became irrelevant.
Yeah, there's
there's
another reason why he became irrelevant. This will really take us off track, which is if you count Shimon at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar in the first generation, they number 60,000. If you count them after Peor, after Bilam and the girls of Moab and Midian, they count 30,000 people. Which means when it says that 24,000 people died of Israel, it was Shevet Shimon, because don't forget, the head of Shevet Shimon was named was Zimri, who got killed. And according to Chazal, either Zimri was the second in command, or it was another name for Tzuriel ben Amishaddai. I think that's who it was. And that was also a big cutting out. So Shimon essentially had waged a civil war against Israel and was wiped out. Whether Moshe is continuing the Yaakov's curse, or whether he has a brand new reason to leave Shimon, that's hard to say. But Shimon is a hard luck tribe. There's no question about it. The next part, however, I find much more interesting. Vayimtzu et Adoni Bezek Bevezek. This whole story about Adoni Bezek Bevezek. In fact, the Malbim even points out that what they did to him was sort of not Jewish. Right? They cut off his fingers and his toes. And the Malbim points out that that's not the way things went. In fact, if you go back to Sefer Yoshua, they certainly fought against kings. They fought against Malki Yushalayim. They fought against all kinds of kings. And what they did with them was they killed them. They killed them. They hung them on a tree. And they took them down, or hung them on a pole. And they took them down before the nightfall, just like the Torah commands. But the killing was done by sword, the way killing was supposed to be done. What seems to be happening here with Bezek seems to be a surprisingly non-Jewish action. It strikes me, you know, as sort of inhumane and un-Toradic, I mean, to be honest. However, I think the answer here, I think it's very important that we, and also, why discuss this battle with Bezek? We're about to spend the next chapter discussing various battles, and the truth is, the goal isn't the battles themselves. The goal is who they didn't conquer, as we're going to see. It's not who they did conquer, it's who they didn't conquer, which is more important. Yes, by Yehuda, it also discusses who they did conquer, as we discussed last week, but the real focus on who they didn't conquer. Why focus not only on conquest, but on the details of the conquest here? I understand, say, for Yoshua, where all the conquests are laid out, and we know the battle plan. And they made a spy, and they lifted up they shattered the, you know, there were all kinds of battle plans. This is a quick parak. Why am I spending so much time on Adoni Bezek? I believe the answer is what Adoni Bezek says himself, which is Vayomer Adoni Bezek Shivim Malachim Bahonoti Dehem Raglehem. This is Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Mekutzatim Hayu Tachat Shulchanei Kasher Asiti Kain Shilem Li Elohim. Just as I did, God has paid me back. What we're going to see during the first chapter is the failure of the Jewish people centers around, I think we're short of chair. I think the failure of the Jewish people, what we're going to see, is not that they so much that they failed to get rid of the non-Jews amongst them, but that they fail to get rid of the non-Jews, and what's going to happen is that they start to intermarry, and they start to worship their idols, and they start to act like the non-Jews will. And I'll take you step by step through that. Adoni Bezek, I think, before we get into all that, and the Jews didn't listen, they worshiped Avodah Zarah, and God smote them down until they prayed, and then they did it again and again and again. And we're going to get to that. We're going to get to all the failures. But I think it's actually a very positive statement towards Yehudah, and it also starts the Sefer Shoftim. As I pointed out last week, Sefer Shoftim goes from very good to very bad, where it says Yehudah should go up first and fight against the non-Jews, until ultimately Yehudah goes up and fights against his own people, Binyamin, using the same language. So essentially you go from nighttime in the first parak daytime and light in the first parak to darkness and despair in the last parak during Shimshon's time. Here, I think, what it stands for us, what strikes me, is Adoni Bezek. Also, what's interesting is, where did he take Adoni Bezek? Let's take a look in the Pasuk. It's not only that they chop off his fingers, but Vayomer in Pasuk Zion, Vayomer Adoni Bezek, Shivim Lachim Bahonotu, Dehem Raglem, Ketzim Hayam Tachat Shulchanei, Kasher Asiti, Ken Shilem Li Elohim, so God is paying me back, Vayivyehu Yerushalayim Vayamat Sham. They specifically bring him to Yerushalayim. Now, Yerushalayim is going to be conquered in the next Pasuk. So not only, now, it doesn't mean that they brought him to Yerushalayim non-conquered, and then they conquer Yerushalayim. The stories are in Ein Mukdam U'Muchar B'Torah, of course. Stories are out of order for a reason. What's more important to tell us about the conquest of Yerushalayim is to tell us about the destruction of Adoni Bezek, the cutting off his fingers, just like he behaved not towards a single king, but to 70 kings. And then when they were through with him, instead of just, I don't know, tossing him away or throwing him in a cave or hanging him on the tree, they specifically brought him to Yerushalayim. The question is why? I think what's happening is it's actually an incredibly positive statement towards what Yehuda started to do, which is they did what they were supposed to do. That is, if you say that the sin of the Jewish people and the failure of the Jewish people throughout Sefer Shoftim was their adherence to non-Jewish law, then I think you could say that the success of the Jewish people would have been not just a distancing of themselves from non-Jewish law, but a reversal of that immoral law that existed. By taking Adoniyahu's Bezek's same punishment that he did to these 70 kings and said, that's the way you're going to act, Mida Keneged Mida, that's the way we act, and I'm going to take off your thumbs. You can tell me it's not a Jewish thing to do? You're right. I'm not treating you like a Jew. I'm paying you back as you would have done to other people. I think it's a statement against the kind of actions that they did. It doesn't say that Yehuda ran around and not. It said they conquered a lot of cities. It doesn't talk about them knocking everybody's finger off. It was specifically Adoni Bezek that made a big deal about it. Why Yerushalayim? If you go back to Bereishit, Yerushalayim exists as a famous city back in Bereishit. It was called Yerushalayim. And when Avram Avinu, who says that we have to tell him what's going to go on in Sodom, because Hu Yavit Tzedakah U'Mishpat L'Chol Amo, because he's going to bring justice and righteousness to all the people of the land, who does he meet out there in Emek HaMelachim? We're short a few chairs. Okay. Yes. Very interesting. Actually, we have archaeological information about that, but it didn't used to be fingers and thumbs. They used to chop off the right fingers of people of the king's hands so they couldn't hold a sword. In fact, we're going to meet a guy later, a Jewish assassin named Ehud Ben Gera, that manages to kill the enemy because he was a lefty. So while they were watching his right hand, he went for the gun with his left hand. So actually, that becomes a big issue. I assume that there were less lefties then than there were now. I can only, when we get to Ehud Ben Gera, we'll look at it. But I can only assume that lefty was not only less common, but it was extremely less common back in those Semitic times. I don't have a proof of that, but it's the only thing that makes sense based on the real focus of the right hand. So it was... What's that?
They made you into a righty.
That's what they did.
Right.
I have a point on the concept that he was doing what the other guy did and it's a positive thing. I have a problem with that. Only because it wasn't so horrendous, you might get away with saying it, but if what he'd done was really atrocious and then Yehuda did the same thing,
right,
then I don't know that you agree that is a positive act.
I agree with you, except for Adoni Bezek's own words, which is, Kain Shilem Li Elohim, I got my comeuppance. As Adoni Ahu Bezek seems to admit at the end...
That's a reason to say it, but not to condone Yehuda's action. All I'm saying is that this pasuk is brought for that reason, because it's Mida Keneged Mida and it shows that God did it, is a good explanation, but to in some way imply that it forgives or excuses Yehuda's behavior... Is there a stretch?
I hear what you're saying. I do hear what you're saying. it's certainly possible that there's a negative thing against Yehuda. I'd like to believe that it was Yehuda that essentially made Adoni Bezek say, "Ken Shalim Elohim." It's certainly arguable. I see it as a... Right, no, but that's because it wouldn't be Mida Keneged Mida. That because
well,
it wouldn't
would
be Mida Keneged Mida.
If he had his body quartered and drawn and shipped out to various places in the country, would he agree? Because that's what he used to do.
That's certainly a strong point. It's certainly a strong point.
I think that you're assuming that Yehuda had in mind to pay him back in kind, but perhaps he didn't have in mind. He was just looking to humiliate
to shave at Yehuda.
Yehuda was looking to humiliate Adoni Bezek, and then it turned out that Adoni Bezek
saw it as a
just punishment. But he may not have had that in mind when he originally did that. He said they originally did that because they didn't want the kings to be able to hold the sword or whatever.
Right.
It may not have been his intention to pay him back.
Right. It was more than just a sword issue. They took it a step farther. I'm sorry. Right. Well, right. I guess the question that we have to ask then is did it just work out to be tshuva by good luck, even though Yehuda did a very questionable thing? Or did Yehuda do the right thing to show Adoni Bezek and everybody else that you simply can't get away with the kind of stuff that you were pulling off up to this point?
And when they use the word
yes. Right, go ahead.
Shalem,
exactly right. In fact, that would remind us of somebody else. There's some other reason why I believe it's all involved in the righteousness. See, if you remember, what was the whole story with Avram? Avram, after defeating the five kings, he wins all the property from Sodom, and he goes out to meet the king of Sodom in something called Emek HaMelech, and somebody else comes out of Ir Shalem. Do you remember who it was? Right, Adoni Tzedek. Adoni Tzedek. So here we have Adoni Bezek, and there we have Adoni Tzedek. I still think, even if I have a hard time explaining that Yehuda's actions of the thumb cutting certainly seem a little strange, their intent to bring him to Shalem, Yushalayim, to bring Adoni Tzedek, where Avraham originally met Adoni Bezek, to the place where they originally met Adoni Tzedek, I think that's a statement that says, in this city of Shalem, which is famous for Avraham's first conquest and war, right? That was Avraham's first successful war. And he went out there, and Sodom said, oh, we'll give you anything we want, just take the people. And Avraham says, I won't take a single thing from you. This is the way we, the Jewish people, make war, and this is how we do things. It strikes me that the actions of Yehuda are very, very similar to the actions of Avraham during that famous meeting, not with Adoni Bezek, but with Adoni Tzedek in Yerushalayim, which then lets me believe that at least they had good intentions with the cutting off the thumbs. I admit it's a strong argument that if you're going to go that far, you can go as far, you know, if Adoni Tzedek, you know, did monstrous things, then you could keep it going. I agree, there's certainly a question there, but it certainly strikes me that the overall desire is to make a point that this is the way we distance ourselves from the actions of the people. If you want to, you could look at it in a more negative sense. This was Yehuda's first slippage into associating with the non-Jewish people. However, I have a hard time with that because what we're going to see over the next parak, during the next half hour, is that the other tribes slip into intermarriage with the non-Jewish people. Yehuda does not. Yehuda does not. Yehuda stays very clean while everything else bad is really happening during the first parak. Yeah.
Wouldn't Yehuda be criticized by one of the Judean for that? I mean, wouldn't we see that critique? We usually see if there's a incorrect, done by a leader, an incorrect action. Doesn't the Navi come to us at some point, or the Shofar come to us and begin to chastise
either that
the leader?
The answer is yes, I believe so. Either that, and we don't see that here, not either that or what might happen is after some tribe does the wrong thing, the next story would be a negative story, which would indicate that something had gone wrong. Here, the next story is the conquest of Yerushalayim. So here again, we see that things are still going very well from Yehuda, which is why I believe Yehuda did ultimately the right thing. I agree, it's a tough thing to swallow. And perhaps we have to throw ourselves back 3,000 years to certainly a different time than we have today to fully understand everything that was going on. Nonetheless, I don't want to dismiss Mr. Levitt's point. I think that what they did was certainly borderline, and maybe it could have gone either way. I personally believe that it was the positive thing to do. The Malbim also talks about it in that way, but it's certainly arguable, and I'm not here to say that my way is necessarily more correct than another. Yeah, I'm sorry, sir. Well, shave it, Yehuda. Shave it, Yehuda. Right. That's, in fact, how Chazal go. Chazal say that Adoni Bezek was obviously such a powerful king that they choose the most powerful king of Bezek. They conquered him to show that they're essentially, that's the way, that's what they've learned him. I have difficulty with that. I see this more as less historical. I prefer to have the story be less about Yehuda and more about the ideal of conquest in Eretz Israel in general. But your idea is certainly viable. Not only is it viable, but I think the Medrash that I read goes with that idea, that Adoni Bezek was the guy to beat. You know, he was, I don't know, whatever team you would, he was the person to beat, and this is the way you had to beat him. So I think that's very definitely an option. Well, we just had a good chapter. Let's start going downhill. Okay. What it will go through, I'm going to read it through quickly. Let me see how much time we have. Good. I'm going to go through rather quickly to the points. And then what we're going to do, we have more of these sheets. These are very critical sheets. These ones, if you don't have them, please. It looks like I may not have printed out enough. I printed 20 of them. And I have to keep one myself.
Is it necessary to keep in mind what the word is, the root of the word is? Gratitude?
Mm-hmm. You could. I don't know. I'd rather say that Yehuda was. I would rather say the man makes the name rather than the name makes the man. I'd rather say that is just because they were named Yehuda didn't make them good. I think that they kept.
Is there something that our name is a prophecy or something?
Certainly, yes. Yes, it's true. It's true. Yeah, that's certainly true.
This is the tribe of Yehuda.
The tribe of Yehuda. Right. The tribe. Right. You're saying that the tribe carried forth the name, their namesake. Yeah, absolutely. Should we keep in mind that their name is all about praise and thanksgiving and thank you for Hashem for giving me what you gave me? It's certainly possible. I'm not sure I'd want to stretch it. I'm not sure that... I think we could find closer things to the good acts of Yehuda throughout Sefer Bereishit and in the Midbar when they jumped into the water first, even though it's a Medrash, and the various things that they did in the Midbar and say that they lived up to their name rather than they just took what you're presenting is a very Kabbalistic idea that somehow it stays with them. I have no problem with that whatsoever, but I think it's to go a step beyond that is to say that it's not only the name, but you can look at the actions that they did. Yehuda constantly doing tshuva. First he goes down and he has problems with his son and he manages to pick himself back up and then he's willing to sacrifice his own sons for the sake of sacrifice himself for the sake of saving Binyamin's life. I think he really it's more than just a name. I think it's the actions. I think he lives up to his name. In fact, we'll find out. You ever wonder, there was a terrible guy that David runs into. His name was Nabal HaKarmeli. Do you remember him? Nabal HaKarmeli. He asked Nabal for stuff. Give me some wine because we protect you. And Nabal goes, I'm going to give you my wine and my bread and my food. In fact, he speaks to him exactly as Lavan spoke to Yaakov. These are my sheep and my things. You ever wonder? Lavan? Nabal. So the question is it a Kabbalistic idea that the names are inverted and they're the same people, or did they inherit the name afterwards? Many times we're going to see people are given the names afterwards based on what they do. We see that by Shlomo Melch. Shlomo was called Yedidiah because Hashem was close to him. Probably Nabal's original name was something like Harry. But after he acted like a Lavan, they decided to switch it around. Maybe. Or you can take a more Kabbalistic approach. Because his mother was unfortunate enough to give him the name Nabal, he wound up being an inverted Lavan. He just did everything Lavan did, but did it slightly backwards. Continue on with the parak. Vayilachamu b'nei Yehudah Yushlayim vayilkdu otav vayakul lefi cherev et ha'ir shechu ba'esh. They conquer Yushlayim. The Radak points out here that this is during Yehoshua's time. We discussed this last week. It's better to say that the stuff that's happening here is a flashback to what happened in Sefer Yehoshua than it is to say that what happened in Sefer Yehoshua, the same stories, were prophecy about the future. That's the way the Radak holds, that's the way Rashi holds. If you take a look at Rashi, or the Radak actually, it says specifically, Perush, if you take a look, if you have a Radak Chet, it says, Vayalachmu bnei Yehuda, Perush v'kvar nilchamu ki bimei Yehoshua nilchamu. So the tendency is, the preference to say that you want to go back in time, you don't want to go forward. Future prophecy, most prophecy is not future prophecy. Most prophecy is an uncovering of a reality that you have right now. Future prophecy is really restricted to when you want to tell somebody they better change their ways or else. So it's best not to be in Sefer Yehoshua and say, oh, I have a story that's repeated in Sefer Shoftim. It must be a future prophecy by Yeshua. You prefer not to do that. Not that it can't be done. You prefer to say that the story is repeated here as a flashback rather than a post-forward. So all this happened actually in Yeshua's time. They conquered Yerushalayim, and they conquered Dvir in Perek Yud Aleph. And then we have the whole story between Kalev and her daughter. Now, I hate to skip this for the people who weren't here last week, but we can't go into it again. There's a whole story about Kalev and his new chosen son slash nephew, Otniel ben Kenaz, and a story about the daughter jumping off the camel. It's a fascinating story, but I'm afraid we covered it last week, so I don't want to go into it now, and we'll skip over it. Feel free to talk to me afterwards, or it's online if you wish. It is a very crucial story, but I don't want to repeat it. I'd rather skip this section and continue on with the theme of today, which is where the Jews went wrong in their conquest. Yes?
Well, I thought that the Jews had gotten a good foothold in each of the territories of the Shvatim
they
before
did.
Yehoshua died.
They
and
did.
They had another, 7 years before he died, that where they were living and supposed to be mopping up.
Right. That's what we're looking at here. We're looking at mopping up right here during Yehoshua's time.
It doesn't really seem like mopping up to me, because it sounds like all the Bnei Israel are saying, who should do this first? Well, if they're all living in their own territories, they all ought to do it.
I believe the who should do it first would go back, just like the Radak says, to Yeshua's time. Because if you remember, who's the one who first went out to make war? The first war that Yeshua made was against the southern kings.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Yehuda was in fact the first one to take his tribal land. So again, there's a little bit of time warp here. This is not really after Yeshua's death. I know the Sefer starts with Vayiacharei Mot Yehoshua, and that's because, as we discussed yesterday,
it's all in the same person.
That's correct, but believe it or not, it's a flashback immediately, which is really the words by Vayiacharei Mot Moshe, Yehoshua is trying to tell you, now that there's no more leader and the tribes are on their own, this is the way that they acted. Some of that was done even during Yehoshua's time. I'd like to leave the time warping problem away for now. Your question is very good, but if we get into the time warping issue, we could really get stuck quite a bit. So for now, just suspend belief and put the time wherever you like it, and just picture Yehoshua out of the picture. Whether he's out of the picture because he's alive, and not involved in Yehuda's actions, as we discussed yesterday, that conflict between Yosef, where Yehoshua was from Shevet Yosef, and Kalev from Shevet Yehuda, whether it's conflict-based or whether it's just after Yehoshua's death, I'll leave up to you. But the bottom line is, Yehuda appears to be on their own, and the tribes have already fractured into independent units. So let's skip over the entire to the next section. If you notice, the next section is on, starts at Pasuk Tet Zayin, which is 16. Uvnei Keni Chotein Moshe, and now we're talking about Yitro's kids. Bnei Keni Chotein Moshe, the children of Keni, who was another name for Yitro, Alu Meir HaTzmarim. Now, Ir HaTzmarim, we know from the Torah, is none other than Yericho. So they were living in Yericho, at Bnei Yehuda. And where did they go? They went to Bnei Yehuda, Midbar Yehuda Asher Benegev Arad. I was going to bring a map, but I couldn't find one, to be honest. Hopefully next week I'll bring a map, because it's very important to do with maps. But if you picture Yerushalayim in the center of the mountains, and you go down 30 minutes, you're in Hebron. If you go down another 30 minutes, you're in Dvir. If you go down about 15 minutes, you're at the very bottom of the mountains of Yehuda before you get to this desert. That's Arad. For people who've been to Arad, you know that's really... It's on the way to the Dead Sea. It's the way to get to the Dead Sea if you don't want to go through the mountains of Yerushalayim. So you drive if you're coming from the airport, what you do is you go down the coast, essentially. You cut over by Arad, which is really right below the Judean mountains, and then you wiggle your way back up a little bit north to the Dead, just a little bit north to the Dead Sea. So essentially, Arad is down right past where the mountains end. So apparently, the Canaanim liked that territory, which isn't surprising, because originally the Midianites lived in a very flat deserty area, and they decided to go back to this area. Vayelech vayeshev et ha'am, and they settled their nation there. Vayelech Yehuda et Shimon Achiv, and then And then Yehuda went down to battle with Shimon, Vayachrim Oto, and they battled them, Vayikrat Shem at Yir Chorma, Vayikod Yehuda at Aza, Vet Gvula, Vet Ashkelon, Vet Gvula, Vet Ekron, Vet Gvula. And they conquered all these cities. Vayihi Adonai et Yehuda, Vayorish et Ahar, they conquered the mountains. Kilo the Horish et Yoshvei Ha'emek, Kirechev Barzel Lahem. It's a very strange Lashon. Listen to the Lashon. It's very like a passive tense. I'll repeat Pasuk Yutet 19. Vayihi Adonai et Yehuda, God was with Yehuda, Vayorish et Ahar, and they conquered the whole mountain areas. And in the previous Pasuk it says not only the Har, it's the Har, the Shvelah, the Negev, they got all of that area. The one place they weren't able to conquer is Kilo the Horish, because it's very strange, it's hard to translate, because they were not able, Kilo the Horish, or they were not allowed to conquer Yoshvei HaEmek, Ki Rechev Barzel Lahem, because they had iron chariots. Where is HaEmek? Again, this is where a map would be beautiful, and I'm sorry I don't have a big one in Mir Sashem next time. In the end, yeah, it is essentially, the truth is, as soon as I mention it, everybody will know what I'm talking about. Ha'emek is none other than the Gaza Strip. Ha'emek is the valley on the way down to, on the way down to the water. And that is where the Plishtim had set up territory. That's where the Jews, when they were coming out of Mitzrayim, were not allowed to go up because they, because God did not want them to make war against the Plishtim, because the type of miracle God would have had to perform to get them to beat the Plishtim was so outside of the ordinary that it would have, I think, broken the whole idea of Bechira Chofshi. That's a philosophy shear in general, so maybe I should stay away from that. The bottom line is this was off territory. In fact, it used to be Nechama Leibowitz's brother, Professor Yeshaya Leibowitz often said, and was often during the 80s, we really castigated for him. He was a real apikoros for it. Apikoros defining as anybody who doesn't agree with your personal religious beliefs would be a definition of apikoros. So he believed, he said, never ever was Gaza or the entire Gaza Strip ever a part of Israel. It was never conquered by Israel. It wasn't conquered by David. It was not even the original borders that are defined in the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Now the things have come a little bit. Now in the '80s, it was the apex of the Gush Emunim, you know, days. I remember that's when I came to Israel, and nobody would hear about the idea that 1,000% of Israel was not Jewish land. Today, I think we're a little more balanced, and an honest biblical analysis will prove Yeshayahu Leibowitz correct. Never was the land conquered, not once, never. It was always, even though it says here that Aza was won out, it then goes back and says, but they couldn't get to Amic. What does that mean? That means they went in, they punched about Aza a little bit, and then they got out of there because it was too dangerous. Right? Which is very similar to the situation we have today. I remember in 1986, I was a soldier then, and I was doing Batash, Bitachon Shatuf, in Aza. I did, a very nasty month in Aza. It was incredibly unpleasant. This was 2 years before the first Intifada. We went in, we had control over the city, but the truth is, it wasn't exactly our city. It wasn't our city then in the 80s, it's not our city now. That's really what you're reading here. They had Aza, but they didn't have Aza. That Aza, but as far as the territorial conquest over the entire Gaza Strip and the entire Amek of that area, they did not control. But the Lashon here needs to be remembered. Why then, because I want to really go Pasuk by Pasuk, why mention Chever HaKeni? Why mention it? Who cares? Who cares about Chever HaKeni? I think that there are two possible answers. One is, don't forget who's writing the Sefer Shmuel. And then Sefer Shmuel talks about Shaul's big mistake. It's his battle against the Amalek in the Negev. And Shaul speaks to a certain nation that's actually made a peace treaty with the Amaleki and says, you better get up out of here because we're about to make war with the Amaleki. And if you're with them, you're going to get destroyed. And who was that? None other than the Canaim. So this may be a foreshadowing by Shaul to say, by the way, if you're wondering how the Amaleki got, how Canaim got down there, this is how. However, that's a rather negative approach. That's as if what Yehuda did will ultimately lead to the Canaanites joining up forces with the enemies. I don't buy it, to be honest. I prefer to look at the Canaan in a positive light. Why? Because in a few chapters, we're going to have a story about Devorah. And we're going to meet a woman named Yael, Eshet Chevra Keni. Same people we have now. And she is going to act as a double agent for the Jews, and she's going to kill Sisera dead in the most nasty and spy-ridden, you know, 007 type of way. And that's a very positive thing that she does.
But
what's that?
Not
what?
She's
not. No, but it looks like they... It looks like not all of them came to... not in Aza. They go down to Arad. So they didn't get all the way down there. They were certainly in Yehuda's controlled territory. It's true. Certainly they left some people in the Ir HaTzmarim. in Yericho, and that's where she met Sisera, and that's where they had a relationship. Probably when it says that they have moved all their tribe down, of course, you have to understand in the Torah, in Navi, whenever it says kol, you always have to understand the word kol generally means rubo kikulo. Nothing so black and white. If you're curious about the first case where kol means rubo kikulo, it's of course the Aseret HaMako, where the barad comes down and it destroys all the vegetation, right? Mm-hmm. And then the tzfardim come down and they eat the vegetation. You have to say, well, where's the vegetation? So Rashi says, oh, it was the one that bent down and come back. But what it really is rubo kikulo. When it says kol, you have to take it with a grain of salt. What it means is kol from anything greater than 51% really means the job is done. And that could be proven throughout Tanakh. So here they've got people up and down. So first of all, the Chever Keni play a very positive role in Jewish politics. Not only that, we're about to, once again, the whole theme of Sefer Shoftim is all about how the Jews get together with the non-Jews and start to act like them. We're going to see that in just a few sentences. I believe in contrast to that, again, it's go shave at Yehuda, because I believe this whole opening is go shave at Yehuda, is the Chever Keni come down and live with Yehuda. But not once does it mention that Yehuda intermarries with him, that they pick up their customs. The Goyim are the Goyim. Never, the Chever HaKeni did not pick up Judaism. They stayed as a Midianite tribal Bedouin type of tribe. That's what they stayed. But where it's describing all the other tribes and their intermarriage, here you've got a situation where you've got possibly the people that you're the most likely to intermarry with, the people that you might be the closest with, and yet there's no indication here whatsoever that Yehuda intermarries with Chever HaKeni. And I believe this is a very positive thing. Also brought down here, what do we need to know about Chever HaKeni? To say, you know what? The Jews, the Yehudim, from Yehuda, behaved properly, and because of their appropriate behavior, they had a good relationship, and that relationship would ultimately lead to a salvation of the Jewish people during Devorah and Sisera's time. So I see this in a very positive light. Again, it's arguable, and you could say the Malbim disagrees. The Malbim, who says is the one who wants to foreshadow what's going to happen in Sefer Shmuel, I don't buy it. I see it as a positive thing, yes.
Is it just me, or is there kind of a lot of jumping around here? It doesn't seem to be any, they go from Yud and Shemon, and then they jump around to Kalev, and then they talk about the...
There is. That's because the Torah is written with a theme. The Kalev theme is all about the failure to hire a king. Yehoshua's failure to appoint the second in command. So Kalev does the job for him, and he hires his son, Atniel ben Knaz. It's all about kingship, because what's very important to realize is any sefer is never historical. It's not the goal, even if it happens to go chronologically in order, the goal is not to tell us a history. It's what Menachem Liebtag says, it's to tell us the history of the revelation of God to the Jewish people. And that happens in themes. Each section is a different theme, so it's going to jump around to make sure the theme is there. So the first theme is to tell us that Yehuda is on a roll. That's really a long theme. Among that, Yehuda actually succeeds appointing a king, although it's short-lived. Among that, Yehuda successfully has a good relationship with the non-Jews that are amongst them. Why? Because the rest of the theme of the chapter is how all of that falls apart. So let's spend our last 15 or so minutes on, how are we doing? About 15 minutes on that. And we'll see essentially the difference between the Shevet Yehuda and the other tribes. We're up to Pasuk Chaf. Vayitnu l'kali ben Chavron kasher diber Moshe vayorish misham shlosha b'nei anak. So he gets rid of the three giants. I'm sorry. Ve'et ha-yevusi yoshev b'yushalayim Lo horisho b'nei Binyamin. Here's something very interesting. We're not talking about Shevet Binyamin. We're talking about Shevet Yehuda. But the Yevusim that are in Yerushalayim, which is the northern part of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was divided into two cities. Southern Yerushalayim, which belonged to Yehuda, that Yehuda conquered. And the northern walled city of Yevus, which would only be conquered during David's time. So they were unsuccessful at getting rid of the Yevusi. Let's continue on to Shevet Yosef. Vayalu Beit Yosef gam heim Beit El, and they fought against Beit El. Vahashem imam, and also things are very good. God is with them. Vayatiru Beit Yosef beBeit El. They spied out. By the way, don't forget Meraglim when it says Vayaturu, it doesn't mean they toured. This is the correct word. Vayatiru means they spied out. Vayaturu Beit Yosef beBeit El. V'shem ha'ir lefnim luz. And they see a guy there, and he goes out of the city. Vayomru lo harenu not mevayir. Show us the way into the city. So they actually convince somebody in the city. Theoretically, their enemy convinces them to work for them as a double agent, what they call now in modern days a stinker, or for a Palestinian, somebody who better have a good life insurance policy. But you always have a certain amount of that kind of policy where the people work for the Jews. It happens. happens today. Vasinu imcha chesed. If you do this, we'll do charity with you. We'll treat you right. Vayarem vo'ir. They showed them the way into Luz. Vayakua ta'ir l'ficharev v'ta'ish v'kol mishpato shideichu. Vayelech ish eretz chitim. So he went way up north. Eretz chitim is north of Syria. Vayiven ir vayikrash maluz v'hushmada yomaseh. Why do we have to know these details? Again, I think it's a positive thing. We saw that God was with Shevet Yosef. Shevet Yosef does the job that they're supposed to do. The job is not to kill everybody in sight. The job is to get rid of any element that will cause the non-Judaization of the Jewish people. And they succeed. This guy says, I've had enough. I'm out. They convince the people to leave peacefully. Well, partially peacefully and partially with war. So I think it's a rather positive thing. But the lo horish menashed beit shan ve'benotev ve'tanach ve'benotev ve'yoshvei dor ve'benotev ve'yoshvei bilvlam ve'benotev ve'yoshvei mikido ve'benotev ve'yola k'nani l'ashev baretz hazot. They could not get rid of this property. They could not get rid of all these cities. Where are these cities? Again, here a map would play out nicely. It is Emek Yisrael. Emek Yisrael is right on top of Yehuda v'Shomron. And then you have this gigantic valley right below the Galil. It cuts Israel in half. In half. Above it is the Galil, Shevet Naphtali, Shevet Ashur, Shevet Zvulun, Shevet Moshe, not Shevet Moshe. And to the south of it is Shevet Yosef, Shevet Binyamin, Shevet Yehuda. And in the middle, at this time, is a big fat enemy who lives down there all through that strip. And they're a big problem that won't be solved until Devorah's time. But for now, we'll continue on. Vayiki Chazak Yisrael, when the Jews managed to be strong, Vayasim et HaKnani Lamas v'horesh lo harishu. They did not succeed at getting rid of them. V'Ephraim lo harish et HaKnani, and Ephraim couldn't get rid of the Kani, Ayoshev begazer, v'yosha Kani bekirbo begazer. Zvulun lo harish et Yoshvei Kitron. They didn't get rid of the people of Kitron. V'Yoshvei Nahalol, v'yeshev HaKnani bekirbo, and the Kani lived amongst them. This is different. V'yu Lamas, and they had to pay taxes, dues. Asher lo horishet Yoshvei Ako, and Asher, forget about who they conquered. It's not about who they conquered. It's about who they didn't conquer. God wasn't with them, and they didn't conquer. Asher lo horishet Yoshvei Ako, but Yoshvei Tzidon. I'm going to leave it alone for right now, just because we're running out of time, and I want to get to a different point, but it's an excellent question. And the Asherim live amongst the Kananim, Yoshearis, ki lo horishu, because they didn't get rid of them. Naphtali lo horishet Yoshvei Beit Shemesh. Naphtali is up by the Kinneret. Today's Kinneret. This Beit Shemesh is not our Beit Shemesh. Beit Shemesh of the north. V'yoshvei Beit Anat, v'yeshev b'keren ani, v'yoshvei aretz, v'yoshvei Beit Shemesh, v'yoshvei Anat, hayu lahem lamas. V'yilachatzua emori et b'nei Dan, and now we talk about Shevet Dan. They push them up in the mountains. Dan can't even conquer their territory at all. They're total failure at conquering the territory. They're essentially living with Beit Yosef. Where is Dan? Dan is from Shalvim, modern-day Shalvim, all the way down to Yafo, Tel Aviv Yafo. Here it is, which means Dan was powerless. Yosef managed at some points to make them a servant to the Jewish people. Let's continue on. Perek Bet, we're going to read six psukim and then we're going to analyze. He comes out of the Gilgal, which is significant because that's where the Mishkan was, maybe at this time. Ela Bochim. Vayomer alet chem Mitzrayim, I've taken you out of Mitzrayim. Vaviet chem al aretz asher nishbati lavotechem, and I gave you this land which I promised your fathers. Vaomar lo efer briti chem lam, I will never break my covenant. Vatem lo tichratu brit yoshev aretz, your deal is don't make a covenant with the non-Jews. Hazot mizbechotem titotzun, you shall destroy their altars. Lo shamatem bekoli, and you did not listen to my voice. Mazot asitem, what are you doing? What have you done? Vegama marti lo agareish otam mipnechem. And then I said, now what's wrong with the tense here? It should be az ani omer, but it's not, it's past tense. V'gam amarti, so I said, lo agaresh otam yivichem, v'ayu lechem letzidim, v'elohem liyu lechem lekesh. And they're going to be thorns in your sides, and there'll be a trap for you. V'ayhi kedaber malach Adonai et adarim eilu, when the malach spoke his words, v'kol Yisrael, v'yisu et kolam v'yivku. They raised their voice and they cried, v'yikrushem makom bochim, v'yizbuchusham l'ashem. So I ask you a question. Why were they unsuccessful? According to this pasuk, why were they, these psukim, why were the Jews unsuccessful at getting rid of the non-Jews in their midst? Why were they unsuccessful?
Hashem was not with them.
Because? Vatem lo tichratu brit li yoshvei ha'aretz, mizchot tel tzim, lo shamatem b'koli. You did not listen to my voice. Mazot esiti. V'gam amarti lo agareish milchem. It appears to be cause and effect. And therefore I have said, or I'm saying now, like ataya dati, now I know. Now I'm telling you that I will not remove these people from your midst. Because you're starting to intermarry with them, you're failed. You're failed. The only problem is that doesn't... What's that?
So that's
there's a little bit of a problem, because I want to read you something from Sefer Shmot. If you have this sheet, at the top of the sheet, I'm going to skip down to line number 11. I'm sorry, not line 11, line number 15. V'shilachti, Pasuk Chafchet, V'shilachti tat tzira lefanecha. This is where God is describing how they're going to conquer the whole land. V'gersha et achivi v'et aknani v'et achidim mefanecha. They're going to get rid of all the enemies from you. Lo agarshenu mipanecha b'shana achat. But I'm not going to do it so fast. Pen tichyeh ha'aret shmama, lest the land become fallow, become empty. V'rabba lecha chayat ha'sedeh. And there are too many wild animals. Me'at me'at argashenu. I will do it nice and slowly. Ad asher tafra, until you become like puravu, until you become many. V'nachalta et aretz. And afterwards you'll inherit the land. Which means according to Sefer Shemot, were they supposed to conquer the land in one shot? They were not. They were supposed to leave people there. They couldn't expect success. In fact, God specifically told them not to commit a scorched earth policy on the entire land, because if they did, they'd wind up with a land that was uncontrollable. So what is it? The Ramban goes a step farther. The Ramban said as long as they give up a vote of Zara, even if they don't accept Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, it was acceptable that they say. But well, the issue was, according to Ramban, you're not allowed to let them stay and worship a vote of Zara. That you have to get rid of. So even if I want to say that that's the chait, that they, not that they let them stay, but what the Ramban would say, they let them stay and they worship a vote of Zara. And by allowing them to continue to worship a vote of Zara, they got involved with them and picked up their vote of Zara, which is in fact what happened. But even if you want to say that that's true, I got a problem with Sefer Shmot. The reason why they're not allowed to conquer them fast is because there's a geosocial reason. You're not allowed to conquer the land. I have another problem. Let's go to Perek Gimel. It's the last item on this sheet, printed out, of Sefer Shoftim. Let's jump ahead in Sefer Shoftim. Ve'ela goyim asher aniach Hashem l'nasot bamit Yisrael. These are the names of the nation that God left to test the Jewish people. Et kol asher lo yad'u. All that they did not know, at kol milchamot Knan, all the wars that they fought against Knan, rak leman dorot bnei Yisrael, so that the bnei Yisrael would learn lelamdam milchamas, that they would not forget how to fight war, rak asher lefanim lo yida'um. So according to this, the reason why they couldn't get rid of everybody so fast is because if the second generation had nobody to fight, they would forget how to do what? To make war, and then an enemy would come down and wipe them out, wipe them off the face of the planet. Oh, I got three reasons. Now, Rashi changes this last one around. We're running out of time, so I have to skim. Rashi says what it means is not that they had to learn to make war, but they would learn that they're going to have to make war because of their sins. But that's not the simple pashup shot. The simple pashup shot is they were left there so the Jews would not forget how to make war, because the world doesn't work in a nice, happy place where everybody comes and says, ooh, I want to be your friend now. People come from far away and want to destroy you, so we got to leave some enemies in the land so that you do not forget how to fight. Wow. First of all, the significance of all of these things in modern days is incredible. But I don't want to get into that because I don't like to play. I don't like to play this. I'm not smart enough to balance God's books, and I can't say I don't like to be fundamentalist and say, okay, I read this here, so I know how to act in the year 2001. Whatever we personally get out of these things is interesting. 2002, thank you. You see why I don't like to do these things? I can't even keep track of what year I am, no matter what else was at. Nonetheless, there's some significant theological implications here that have an effect on the way that we behave now.
Well, I think the way we behave, one implication, and I'm not sure I subscribe to it, but I've heard it say that one of the reasons that Hashem makes sure we have wars is that we don't fight with one another. Because as soon as we don't have outside enemies, we divide ourselves.
All right, that's not. I've heard that. I don't know where I've seen that.
Well, the Chazon Ish is one person.
Right. But I mean, textually, I don't know where I've seen that, but I have heard it. We fight against others, we don't fight against ourselves. Right. All of these things are a little sad. I mean, we'd like to believe that if everything had gone well, there would have been world peace, Mashiach would have come, and the Jews wouldn't have had to know war. Maybe God was talking about a shorter period of time, for 100 years, until Shlomo would come and make peace among the world. You still have to know how to make war. Because we only have 3 minutes, these theological issues I don't want to get into, but you can see there's a little confusion. Let me see if I could solve them. If you take a look at this sheet, you'll see what's going on here. And Chazal noticed the differences. There's many repeated stuff between Sefer Yoshua and Shoftim with Yehuda and Yosef. If you take a look with B'nai Yosef, let's jump down to B'nai Yosef. It says, Lo yachlu B'nai Menashe, lo rishit arim elu. They were not able to. But when it repeats the same words in Sefer Shoftim, it leaves out an important word, which is yachlu. It doesn't say lo yachlu, lo horish. They did not decide to. Now you're going to say, oh, that really means they weren't able to. But I would disagree, because the ones who weren't able to was Sevet Yehuda. And in order for God to point out that they weren't able to, he changed around the Lashon. Go back to Sevet Yehuda, one on the first row, and it says, Ki lo lahorish, they were not able to get rid of. Here, by Sevet Menashe, it was lo horish. So even if there's a repeated story, I think what God is stressing is they didn't go all the way to do what they needed to do. Now take a look at what they do at the very towards Ephraim. If you go to the Ephraim part, it also says Ephraim lo horish. Also, they did not get rid of their people that they were supposed to get rid of, which is just like it says Yoshua. But now take a look at Zvulun. Zvulun. It doesn't make what the horish. There is no difference. It's lo yachlu lo horish and lo horishu. That's the real difference. I'm running out of time, so I can't. We only have a minute or two, but I want to take you down to Zvulun. What does it say by Zvulun? Zvulun lo horish, and it says Vayeshev Aknani bekirbo. What does it say? You see, what we're looking at through Sefer, through Perek Aleph, is a constant degradation. It's a decline in the Avrei Shevet. The first, you asked me why God wasn't with them. He was with Shevet Yehudah, because Yehudah, not only did they not intermingle with the Jewish, non-Jewish people, but they took in non-Jewish people and treated them how to behave more or less like Jews, or at least behaved in a way that kept that, so they knew this is Jewish and this is not Jewish. Menashe doesn't keep that distancing, but they create a mas on the people. Keep in mind, by the way, Yehudah didn't make a mas on the people, very simple reason. A mas doesn't mean a tax on money, it means a tax on people, which means you could have non-Jews working for you. Zvulun takes a step further. Again, I'm rushing through and I should be proving a lot of this stuff. Zvulun says, Vayeshev Aknani bekirbo vayehi lamas. Here they put them to mas, but all of a sudden the non-Jews are coming to live in the Jewish cities. Take a look at Asher. Vayeshev Asheri bekerav Aknani. It's the exact opposite. It's not that they're coming to the Asher, it's that Asher is going to live amongst them. The next one is Venaftali lo horishet yoshvei beit shemesh v'yoshvei reinat. It never specifies what they do with them. And that's essentially, and Dan is the ultimate situation where they can't even get a foothold. But what you see through the first four is you go from a Yehuda, who doesn't have anything to do with the non-Jews, to Yosef, who puts a tax on the non-Jews, to Zvulun, who starts having the non-Jews living even amongst them, to a situation where Asher, who is actually going out to live among the non-Jews, and what you see is your classic assimilation. It's a classic assimilation text. And that's why I think this book is sort of classical, and every Sefer Tanakh is eternal. It not only speaks historically, but it speaks meta-historically. And what you see is this classic, you open up the door, or lepetach chatat rovetz, and you go straight down the situation where instead of you taking them, you know, and making them convert to your religion, you start converting to their religion. And ultimately what happens after that is there's a total intermarriage, and because of that total intermarriage, God leaves Jewish people. I never specified what that has to do with the whole war thing. And what that has to do with the wild animal things. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Emir Sashem will touch upon it next week, but we'll probably continue and hopefully get to our first shofet, Atniel ben Knas. Have a nice night.